Is it ever normal to hear voices? And is ginger ale really the best treatment for nausea? Welcome to the Carlet Psychiatry Podcast, a CME publication, keeping psychiatry honest since 2003.
I'm Chris Aiken, the editor-in-chief of the Carlet Psychiatry Report.
And I'm Kelly Newsom, a Psych NP student and a dedicated reader of every issue. Our summer double issue arrived in the mail.
We'll start with tips from an interview with Dr. Rajneesh Mago, who is the editor-in-chief of Simple and Practical Mental Health and the author of the book, Side Effects of Psychiatric Medications.
And it's full of tips on how to manage side effects, including nausea. In this issue, we recommend ginger as a first-line treatment for nausea on psychiatric medication, but not ginger ale. We're talking about ginger capsules. Now, originally, I thought that this was like an old wives' tale, but it turns out there's a lot of evidence to support their use in nausea. There are randomized controlled trials where ginger capsules treated nausea in GI disorders, chemotherapy patients, and pregnancy. This is very different to what usually happens in practice. As a nurse, what I've seen in practice is that we give ginger ale, and when that doesn't work, we move on to antiemetics. But we wouldn't expect ginger ale to work because it's 50 times less potent than the ginger in capsules. The dose of the ginger capsules is 550 milligrams, given 2 to 3 times a day.
Yes, and I've actually used some of these ginger capsules in practice, but what I found out from Dr. Mago, who brought them up in the interview, is that I was doing it all wrong. He recommends giving the ginger capsule 30 minutes before a meal. That gives it time to absorb and enter the bloodstream, and then taking the medication immediately after eating a full meal. And he's found that much more effective for preventing nausea. So this has really changed my practice.
So, Dr. Aiken, why aren't we using this more often?
Well, one reason is that there's little awareness of this kind of research, in part because there's no money behind it. But another thing is that even if you know about it, it's hard to know which product to use. And that's one thing Dr. Mago did, was he listed a couple products that have good ingredients that you can use with your patients. There are other treatments for nausea mentioned in the interview, along with antidotes for dry mouth and sweating on psychiatric medicines.
Another article that caught my attention in this issue was the one on healthy voices. Dr. Pierre talks about how relatively common it is for people with no mental illness to hear voices. I get it. My patients have been a little depressed at times. I've been a little depressed. But a little psychotic? What does that even look like?
Yes, so the idea that normal people who have no mental illness can actually hear voices has been around for a long time. There's about 36 studies on this with thousands of people. And around 1 in 30 people actually hear voices and have no mental illness. Now, there's two ways of looking at this. One is that this is a totally different thing from psychosis, that it has no relationship, kind of like a shark and a dolphin. They look similar, but they're totally different creatures. A shark is a fish and a dolphin is a mammal. Another way of looking at it is that this is all part of the psychotic spectrum. Now, you're right, Kelly, we are familiar with the anxiety spectrum, the mood disorder spectrum, the idea that everybody has a little bit of anxiety and depression, and when it gets too severe, it crosses a threshold into a full disorder, but that we all share in common this symptom. So the question is, can there be a psychotic spectrum? Can we all share in common a little bit of psychosis from time to time? And that's what Dr. Pierre gets into. He discusses all the research behind it and the different ways of looking at it. I'm not going to get into that now. But I do want to talk about something called the Spectrum Project, which is related. And this was started by Dr. Giovanni Cassano in 1995. He developed a series of rating scales to look at spectrum mental illnesses. That is, all of the soft symptoms that affect people who may have mild versions of a mental illness, and they also affect people with the full version as well. His rating scales are available online. You can go to www.spectrum-project.org. That's spectrum-project.org. He's developed rating scales for mood spectrum, anxiety spectrum, anorexia eating disorder spectrum, addiction spectrum, Like we can all have a little bit of addiction, right? And he has on there a rating scale for psychotic spectrum.
Well, wait, what's on that rating scale? Can you read us some of that?
Here are some of the items from the scale. Have you ever thought that there was a hidden reason for apparently trivial event? Did you ever think that you understood many things that other people didn't? Did you ever feel like something strange was happening to your mind?
So if you saw a young person coming in with these symptoms, could this be an early sign of, say, schizophrenia?
Yes, that's one possibility when you see a patient with mild symptoms of psychosis and they don't have any other symptoms of mental illness. It could be an early sign. And that's something called people at ultra high risk for psychosis. And this has been extensively studied as well. In fact, there was hope that if we gave adolescents with symptoms like these antipsychotics, that it would prevent progression into schizophrenia. But that hope failed. All of those studies failed, and the antipsychotics were not successful at preventing that. So this is not an area where you'd want to give people who just had those kinds of symptoms and nothing else going on an antipsychotic.
There was a study for omega-3s. Is that something you could do for them?
Yes, there was a lot of hope about omega-3s preventing psychosis. Mainly that came from a study that was done 10 years ago out of Vienna. And they took about 80 young adults and adolescents who had early signs of mild psychosis. They gave half of them omega-3s for 3 months and followed them up again a year later. And there was a significant reduction in the ones who went on to have full-blown psychosis in the ones who got the omega-3 fatty acids. Even more remarkable, this group followed those same patients up 7 years later. And at that point, only 1 in 10 of the people who got omega-3s went on to have psychosis, compared to nearly half of the ones who got placebo. So they only got those omega-3s for 3 months, and they could see preventative effects 7 years later, meaning that those omega-3s may have helped them pass through a critical phase of development where their brain could have gone either way, towards psychosis or toward a healthier development. Now that got people excited, and a lot of people were using omega-3s in their practice with these kinds of patients. But the hope faded when a much larger study of 300 patients failed to find a difference in prevention of psychosis with omega-3s. But I'd like the listener to know that there is still a ray of hope there, because this larger study only followed them up for 6 months. So it may not have been long enough to see a difference. And more importantly, in the larger study, both groups, the placebo and the omega-3s, got cognitive behavioral therapy, which we know can actually prevent the transition to psychosis.
Can CBT really prevent psychosis?
Yes, in adolescents at high risk for psychosis, CBT actually has some of the best evidence for prevention, better than antipsychotics and probably better than omega-3s. It's probably likely that CBT helps people manage stress, and any kind of stress can increase the risk of psychosis in someone who's already vulnerable to that. That could include stresses like head injury, as well as stresses like bullying or divorce in the family.
Wait, what does the dosage for these omega-3s look like?
Thank you for bringing us back to the practical tips. To use omega-3s, the dose is 1.2 grams or 1,200 milligrams. And the important thing is that there be a lot more EPA than DHA. So there's two kinds of omega-3s, and it should be the EPA of 700 milligrams and DHA of 480 milligrams. That's what they used in the study. Turns out most products on the shelf have more DHA than EPA. So you have to have the patient search around to find a product with more of the EPA. This is the same way that we use omega-3 in mood disorders. In all of the studies of mood disorders like depression and bipolar, omega-3 only worked when there was a greater amount, specifically 1.5 times as much of the EPA than the DHA. And the dose was the same, that when you add the two together, it should be 1 to 2 grams for mood disorder. You can find specific omega-3 products with high levels of EPA at Dr. Mago's website, www.mago.com. magopsychiatry.com/omega, or my own website, moodtreatmentcenter.com/omega3.pdf.
All right, so what about the adults, the ones that hear healthy voices?
Right, that's what the article in the Carlett Report is really about. It's surprising to me that 1 in 30 adults who have no other evidence of mental illness hear voices. If someone came into my office and said they were hearing voices like a bird telling them to keep going, I might really wonder if they're psychotic and turn to an antipsychotic to treat them. And one thing this article did was help me see that differently, which is to remind us all, nobody has a mental illness unless they have significant distress or impairment from the symptoms. And so, yes, there's a whole breadth of humanity who hear mild voices that aren't distressing, that sometimes help them get through their day, and they don't have any depression or mania or anxiety or signs of psychiatric illness. And it's important to understand that because they might come into our office for other reasons. And in fact, there's a whole group of them on the internet called Normal Voice Hearers, and they have support groups. They get together. Basically, they're really against psychiatrists pathologizing them because they value this experience and don't want to see it labeled or treated with the antipsychotic. So the bottom line is, if a patient comes into your office and has very mild symptoms like that, I guess you got to read the article to learn more about what they're like. You wouldn't jump to an antipsychotic. You would wait and watch and handle it very cautiously. Well, our double issue covers a lot more, including 3 new medications that have entered the marketplace in recent months: esketamine for treatment-resistant depression, brexanolone for postpartum depression, and solriamfetol for fatigue in narcolepsy. This is a dopamine and norepinephrine reuptake inhibitor that might have a role in the future in psychiatry, but hasn't really been studied in psychiatric populations yet.
So we'll also be discussing new medical risks with mood stabilizers, 2 new treatments for OCD, and an exciting new strategy to taper SSRI antidepressants to prevent withdrawal symptoms.
You can send us your feedback and questions to asktheeditor@thecarlettreport.com, and you can subscribe to the full journal to get all the articles we've discussed at thecarlettreport.com, where we're offering a special discount for our podcast listeners. Use the promo code PODCAST and you'll get $30 off your first subscription.
And the subscription includes the print edition delivered to your mailbox and full access to all the articles on the website, monthly CME credits to maintain licensure, as well as an option for self-assessment credits toward your board certification.
The Carlett Report is one of few CME publications that depends entirely on subscriber support. That helps us stay free from the influence of the pharmaceutical industry and bring you unbiased information you can trust.